next case then is State on behalf of Liliana L. versus Hugo C. And the appellant, Mr. Caldwell, you may approach.
May it please the court, my name is Ryan Caldwell. I represent the appellant, Hugo Santino, who is present here today. We are requesting this court to reverse the order of the district court and provide custody to Hugo. Our argument is broken down by the misapplication of the in loco parentis and its abuse of discretion in awarding custody to Teresa. The district court found that Teresa was in loco parentis based simply on her recent actions of caring for Lily. The court failed to analyze two additional elements of in loco parentis: intent, as noted by the Supreme Court in the Winan case, and duration of time. Winan finds that parental relationship only exists if the facts show that the person means and intends to take the place of a lawful parent. The record indicates Teresa's intent was to temporarily care for Lily until something more permanent came along. This intent was also corroborated by Teresa's brother, Daniel, on the record. Additionally, Nebraska case law, I believe, suggests that the doctrine applies when a non-parent discharges the obligation of a parent for a duration of time. The Supreme Court in the Hickenbottom case from 1991 provided an in loco parentis to a stepfather who had been caring for his stepdaughter for a period of 10 years. And in that case, the Supreme Court quoted an Indiana case that applied in loco parentis after 2.5 years of the care of a child of a non-related adult. More recently, the Supreme Court in the Latham case applied the doctrine after more than 5 years. In this case, Teresa took possession of Lily in July of 2016 and requested application and custody in the next month, in August of 2016. I also believe that even if the court finds Teresa's intent was to take the place of a lawful parent and she discharged the obligations of her parent in a sufficient duration of time, the application of the doctrine of in loco parentis should be barred due to Teresa's unclean hands. After Melanie, the mother's
death.
The
unclean hands just being that the child was removed to her residence in Colorado after the mother's death.
That and her failure to notify the court and the biological father that she's had possession of the child for almost a 2 month period of time.
Is that a question of fact for the court?
Yes, I do believe that, Your Honor.
So then that would be an abuse of discretion on the court's part?
Correct.
Aren't the facts of this case pretty unique? You try to compare it to some other cases, but I think this is a pretty unique factual situation.
It definitely is, and I can understand and appreciate the trouble that the district court had in trying to make a decision in this. But I feel like the analysis given was lacking.
In what regard?
With regards to the parental preference doctrine and the application of it, the district court, I believe, abuses discretion by awarding the custody based upon just the best interest.
So what else is the court to put in priority over best interest of the child? Just the fact that someone is a biological parent?
I don't necessarily say that there's a priority in place. I think the preference is that the child's custody and care should go to a parent, unless the best interest wholly overtake and are exceptional circumstances to merit giving that custody to a non-parent.
Isn't that what the court found here?
In 21 pages of discussion, that is what the district court did, isn't it?
They did, and I feel like the analysis failed. And here are my reasons. First, the court analyzed the testimony predominantly on Dr. Lay, whose ultimate finding was that custody going to Hugo would break the bond between Lily and Teresa and cause Lily harm. But I believe this finding is suspect and incomplete because it suggests that the custody to Hugo would mean complete removal of Teresa from Lily's life, and I don't believe that's the case. There's no evidence to suggest that.
Well, the judge refers to being concerned that the father did not acknowledge that he would maintain that bond.
And I do recall that there was a question to Hugo with regards to if he would continue this, and his response was that he wanted to refer to counsel before responding to that. I can only presume that Hugo was taken off guard by that question and wasn't exactly sure and wasn't able to, I guess, quickly analyze his response, and I think his request to refer to counsel for that is just his attempt at making sure that he's not, that he totally fully understands the ramifications of what he's entering into. Going back to Dr. Lay's testimony and the court's analysis, I feel that the court also failed to take into account Teresa's negative factors in her actions prior to the case that took place. Dr. Lay testified that there were several adverse childhood experiences with which Lily had suffered and had the potential to cause further harm, but the record shows that most of those experiences primarily were from Teresa's conduct. Removal from her half-sister, removal from Lily's uncle who took care of her, was a primary attachment after her mother's death.
That was a decision made by the family after the mother died, correct?
Without
a family decision.
I would say it was Melanie's family decision.
Correct.
But without any regard for court recommendations or anything like that until 2 months later. And then lastly, I think the court's analysis on Hugo scrutinizing his initial denial of paternity was an error. Hugo's initial denial and the reasons for it are clearly laid out in the record. He was told by Melanie that he was not the father and that the father was a man who Hugo knew was dating Melanie. So he had no reason to believe that he was the father. But I think regardless, the scrutiny of it is irrelevant in finding whether several years later what is in the children's best interest and the application of the parental preference doctrine.
Wasn't the court troubled by the fact that when mediation was ordered to start evaluating some parenting time issues for the father in November of 2014, nothing took place over quite a long period of time?
Yes, and I think the record also is void of any attempts by either party to mediate.
But at that point in time, your client knew he was the father, the testing had been done, and no effort was made to try to establish or go to mediation to establish some parenting time.
I think the reasoning is lacking in the record. I can't speculate on what the situation was. I wasn't the trial attorney in the matter either. From what I gather, Hugo's intent has always been to try to do what's best for his daughter. And his lack of ability may be based on bad counsel and just lack of overall knowledge about the process from his counsel as well. But I don't believe it has any bearing on whether he can parent the child and take care of her in the future. Now, parental preference can be negated by the best interest of the child, but the parental preference must be given its due regard. And as the Supreme Court in the Wyndham case noted, the parties are not on equal footing. The Wyndham Court also further stated that we are aware of instances where courts have determined that the best interest of the child defeated the lawful parent's preference. We view these cases as exceptional. I don't believe this is an exceptional case. The parental preference is not negated. And if there wasn't any other further questions, I would submit that the order of the district court be reversed and to grant custody to Hugo.
Thank you. Mr. Tassin.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. I think counsel is correct. This is an abuse of discretion review case, and it occurs in the aftermath of not fully, pretty much fully adduced for him. And what the result was an opinion, which I thought was thoughtful, and not simply because it went the way I asked the judge to write it, but rather, I think the judge spent a lot of time. In fact, if there was a headline on the decision, it probably would have something to do with the judge's findings about Mr. Centeno's credibility, because he spends the first four, I think five pages of the opinion detailing the reasons why he found Mr. Centeno's credibility in the trial completely lacking. That obviously had a profound impact on the judge's consideration of the issues that are presented by the pleadings, and I think it's the primary reason why Mr. Centeno lost the case. One of the things the opinion does do, I think, a good job of, in addition to setting forth the reasoning for the ultimate decision, is setting forth the judge's understanding of the applicable law. My theory of defending the judgment, and what I want to convey here today in our argument, is that I believe the judge understood exactly what the law was, and that he exercised his discretion lawfully to come up with a result that fit within the bounds of the law, but also took into account the unique facts of the case. The judge did take pains to explain in the opinion that he recognized that Mr. Centeno had a preference, a constitutional preference, to be the custodial parent of his child. And the judge also found that, and went through the analysis, that that preference could be negated, and ultimately found that due to the evidence that was induced at the trial, the preference was negated. In part because of Mr. Centeno's particular characteristics, which the judge described, if not at length, I think amply described during his opinion, but also because the judge found that the medical evidence of the case, which was very one-sided, I think is a fair way of putting that, the medical evidence of the case was very compelling, that this child, who this case is ultimately about, not Mr. Centeno, the child was going to be harmed substantially. There was a substantial prospect the child would be seriously harmed if Mr. Centeno's petition for custody was sustained. So the judge did what he did. He explained it in his opinion, and he frankly did a better job of doing that than what I'm going to be able to do here today.
Can you talk about, the judge did an interesting thing with the unfitness analysis, right? He didn't find the father unfit. He relied on language out of the Supreme Court case on some showing of unfitness. Is that really the standard?
It is not. And candidly, Your Honor, I don't believe that the judge's, I won't call them musings, the judge's thoughts on that issue were not essential to his judgment. He had to acknowledge that there was substantial evidence of unfitness in the trial record, and I think that's what he was doing. But what he did not do is use the some showing of unfitness standard in any way to compromise Mr. Centeno's chances of winning the case. And I know that that counsel and Mr. Centeno's lawyer has argued in his brief that that's what the judge is doing. But there was no relaxation by the judge of any legal standard that Ms. Leidick had to carry at the trial.
Because, in fact, it would have been easier to just say he's unfit, and then you don't even have to get to best.
That's right. But the judge, obviously, did find Mr. Centeno was legally fit under the minimum standards that are applicable in our cases, and also found at the same time that I lost on the issue of forfeiture too, and I pressed both of those things at the trial. That was one of the, or two of the things that we focused on during the course of the presentation of the evidence. The judge found that Mr. Centeno was legally fit, despite his aside explaining that, you know, it was a close call. But he also found that even given the evidence that the record is replete with, showing Mr. Centeno resting on his laurels through a good part of this little girl's life and didn't take any action to develop any sort of parental relationship with her at all. The judge found, even in spite of all that evidence, that he did not legally forfeit his preference to parental custody.
Well, he didn't even know he was the father, and he was misled in that regard for a couple of years, wouldn't you agree?
I think the evidence did show an email from Ms. Juarez, the natural mother of the child, that told Mr. Centeno, and Melanie had her reasons for doing this, told him that he wasn't the father. And I think the evidence is clear in the record, and this is not me stretching things, so she didn't want anything to do with Mr. Centeno, and she wanted him just to go away.
That really wasn't her call. I mean, we don't need to get bogged down in that.
Obviously not, and I apologize for interrupting, Your Honor.
Did that communication come before or after the child was born?
Came after, I believe. what happened is, and the dates here are important. I think the judge thought they were important. Mr. Centeno was first sued by the state of Nebraska in January 2014 for paternity. He got a lawyer. It took him until, I think, I have the dates written down. It was several months later before he answered the complaint at all. And it was in August, I believe the first part of August of 2015, when he realized that he was the father due to the genetic testing that came through. He did not ask for any parenting time with this child. And the pleadings are in the record, and it's all very clearly set forth as to how this went down. He did not ask for any parenting time with this child until the day the judge ordered him to pay child support, a minimal amount for the child's benefit. That was in March of 2016. So it was over 2 years and a couple months between the time that he first had reasonable notice that, yes, we think that you're the father of this child, to the time that he actually took any legal interest in having anything to do with her. And then, even after he asked the court to award him parenting time, it was another many months before he first laid eyes on the child, which explains, in getting to the crux of the unclean hands argument, which I don't believe has any merit at all in this case, and I don't believe the judge thought of it either. When Melanie died unexpectedly, I think as the record shows, no one who had Lily's interests in mind, meaning her family and anybody else that had anything to do with the child, even considered Mr. Centeno even for a second as a parenting figure for her. To the extent that they realized that he was her natural father, they all knew that he had nothing to do with her, and in fact had denied paternity of her and just wasn't anyone that would even be reasonably considered as having the potential to care for this child at that particular stage of her life. Ms. Leidick took the child in accordance with trial evidence because she was in the best position to do so. She had an ongoing, loving relationship with the child, and she obviously wanted to do right by the child and her late sister. And so she did what she did selflessly, not because of any sort of motive to thwart Mr. Centeno's parental rights or to do anything untoward to the courts.
Was that on a temporary basis? Was that the plan?
It was the plan. Ms. Leidick is, I won't disclose her age, but she's has her children are grown and was not, as the trial evidence, as her own testimony indicates, was not looking to care for a four-year-old and raise her up at the time that Melanie died. But she stepped in, and then, as the evidence also showed, as the evidence also demonstrated, Ms. Leidick, once she realized that Mr. Centeno was not a viable option due to the things that were disclosed by the trial record, that's when she formed the intention to pursue the custody, and that's when we had the trial, and that's when the judge ruled.
Would you agree, in light of the court's findings now at this point, that father's not unfit, but the best interest of the child dictate custody go to the aunt?
Yes.
That to the extent the father, because of the parental preference, to the extent the father develops a relationship and works on that relationship, there's room for modification down the road, isn't there?
Very much so, Your Honor. I think we all know that parenting plans are always subject to being modified based on changes in circumstances, and that was the other point, and I appreciate the question from the court. The other point I wanted to make is that no one has terminated Mr. Centeno's parental rights here. The judge has ordered a parenting plan that cuts him in on the parenting time, and there has been no effort made by me during the course of the trial or the judge in deciding the case that would prevent him from developing a relationship with the child that later could support a modification of the parenting plan to adjust it in a way that he thinks is in her best interest. But what we have here in the beginning and at the end of the day is the trial court judge who couldn't bring himself to do anything other than grant Ms. Leidick's petition because of the way that the trial unfolded, because of the credibility findings, which are very much set forth in the record, because of all the evidence about Mr. Centeno's background, and because of the doctors, because of the professional evidence that was adduced during the trial that would that conclusively demonstrated for the court in the court's judgment that this child would be harmed if the judge didn't do what he did. So he did it. And I think he justified it well enough, certainly very well, in the course of his opinion, that would enable the judgment to survive an abuse of discretion review by this court, and I ask you to refer it.
Thank you, Mr. Chassid.
Thank you.
Was there any rebuttal time left for Mr. Caldwell? right. Mr. Caldwell?
I don't have any additional argument to provide. However, if there are any other further questions, we have to respond.
Well, do you agree that there's nothing in this order that terminates your client's rights? I assume you agree with that.
Yes, I definitely agree with that.
And does that work into the best interests analysis that the court did, that your client still has every opportunity to develop a relationship with this child?
In theory, yes, Your Honor, and I hate to dive into issues that have happened since the filing of the appeal. But
let's not go there. It's not in the record
yet. It's just simply, it's possible, yes.
No.
But you're not challenging the parenting plan?
No. We'd be happy if it were instituted.
So to the extent there's any resistance to allowing father to develop that relationship, that's an issue for another day, but there's nothing to prevent that from happening.
Correct.
At this time.
Correct.
Thank you, Mr. Caldwell. The case will be taken under advisement. The parties are excused, and I will excuse myself at this